This week on Out of the Air features color penciled artist Christine Hubble, who renders her work with birds and native plants on translucent surfaces. Next, discussing his new Americana-flavored album, Love, War, and Misadventures, is Indianapolis-based musician Scott Tyring. Our spotlight's on Valparaiso Creative Council's Sand and Steel Art Fest, running June 26th through the 28th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Valparaiso Creative Council. She's the executive director, has been there, actually the very first executive director, and I happened to be on the board when we made that decision. And you can find information about them at valpocreates.org. Jessica Corral, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to have this time with you guys.
I know, it's always wonderful getting caught up with what's going on in your life.
Thank you.
So you have a whole bunch of things. I mean, since you've taken over, there's been so many things that have happened. So tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll get move forward to what's coming down the pike. You know, you have an actual facility and things, but kind of go over what's happened.
Sure. In the last year, we've revamped an unused space here in downtown Valpo on Indiana Avenue, right on the Creative Corridor. 256 Indiana Avenue is a Valpo Create Center, 3,000 square feet of space, and we have it compartmentalized for creatives to use in a lot of different ways, very, very diverse ways. Aside from that, we've had some amazing murals. Over 10 murals are popped up downtown Valpo, and so we've been the initiator behind that in getting just beautification and art activation in key places with amazing partners.
So to use the space, how does that work? Like, if do you have individual artists that come in and maybe teach classes, or how is that managed?
We have anybody with interest in utilizing or renting for any reason, whether they're having a class or if they want to rent it for a birthday party or maybe an info session, they're welcome to apply to rent. We also have an artist, we call them the Artist Hub Cohort. There's eight artists that are featured, and they have a whole calendar full of events. And so we feature them, and we're kind of using them as the guinea pigs to say, hey, what do you need to facilitate your instruction? How can we meet as a team? What do you need to learn? What is the training that you need to have for content creation, marketing, anything that's important for you? And we're really kind of keeping each other close, like a camaraderie kind of hub of artists that really, they miss working with others when they're in isolation in their own craft. And so this has really been a useful way for us to build that that bridge between everyone.
So is the building just kind of exclusively for Valparaiso residents, or is it
wide open,
available to whoever applies?
Yeah, wide open to anybody that would like to utilize and activate our building. We love every art form being represented, and we try hard to reach out to that and try to get different types of creatives in here glasswork, felting, crochet, DJing. So we have a lot of different opportunities that you might not see at other locations.
And people can find that information at your website, vialpocreates.org. But go ahead and tell us about that. This is going to actually air on May 6th, but tell us some of the things you have coming up spring, summer, and you have a special thing coming up also.
We do. And we also have a brand new website being revamped and being launched in April. So by the time this airs, people can see that. They can go to our calendar, and it has every event that we're doing. One of the big feature events is Sand and Steel Art Fest. I'm working in conjunction with Valparaiso Events, supported by Valpo Park. So there's a trifecta of three organizations working together for this. It's meant to be kind of a county-wide draw, bringing in the Porter County theme of sand and steel. The artists that will be featured are not expected to have a sand and steel theme in their artwork, but we are incorporating local artists from the region. Currently, there's a call out, so if anybody would like to be a part of that and be an art vendor, they can apply at valparaisoevents.org.
So what other future plans do you have? I mean, you've taken the from the time I sat on the board, from a relatively small project, we'll call it, to what it is now. But what's besides sand and steel, what do you have vision beyond that?
We're always adding more murals every year. So Mural Walk happens in August. We have two slated for this year. We're going to have potential sculpture pop-ups happening over the next two to three years. And there's just a lot of growth behind the scenes that I can't share publicly yet. But we will be having some really big leaps and changes in growth that I'm very excited about. Overall, just really happy for people to know who we are and get ourselves out there as a regional connector with artists and art organizations.
So, Jessica, are the utility boxes still an open kind of call? Is there still, or once they're set, is that in perpetuity?
That is actually something that I work with the city. The city is the lead for that. And once they're filled, they're filled. So until we have more utility boxes to cover, then we'll do another call out. Yeah, but that's excellent. A phenomenal way for art to pop up in meaningful ways across the city, really sharing artwork on blank canvases that would otherwise be overlooked. And it's been such a great initiative that the city's taken on that.
And as a you know, viewer or someone who drives around in Valpo, it's like such a pleasure to see them.
I love that. Thank you for that feedback. And I think that's also what the murals do as well, right? On a monumental scale. And so we're trying to kind of emulate that activation of the creative district in a very visual way.
I don't know if you're at the point yet to start expanding staff-wise. I mean, right now you're kind of flying solo, but is it down the road, you're getting like a development person or other types of people to help you out? I know you have a lot of volunteers, but...
I mean, we have a very strong board of volunteers, but ultimately we will need staff to support these roles. And we're getting there, Larry. You know, I think it's just a matter of making sure that we know the direction before we set people in place. So, that's our next goal, is to have a team that's going to expand a little bit, too. And we're excited to grow in fun ways.
In our last few moments, tell us the website and how people can find out about you.
ValpoCreates.org. You can follow us at ValpoCreates on Instagram and Facebook. We have a lot of fun reels. You can see behind the scenes of what we do. If you follow us, you can message. You get directly to me. You can email us at info@ValpoCreates.org.
Well, that's Jessica Harrell, Executive Director for Valpo Creative Council. And you can check out all that stuff at the website. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So exciting.
And a Spotlight Extra. Off Track, a South Shore Roller Derby and Arts Festival fundraiser will be on May 30th at Promise You Art House in Highland. Go online on Facebook to find out more information. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Ember Forge Consulting, with end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation. Ember Forge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
This is Meg Barrow of the Beverly Shores Depot Museum and Art Gallery. I'm the curator. You're listening to Art on the Air, Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Christine Hubble to Art on the Air. Christine is a native-born Hoosier working primarily in colored pencil. She earned a foundational certificate in botanical and scientific illustration from the Denver Botanic Gardens. Her illustrations focus on how humans make meaning out of the natural world, particularly focusing on birds and flowers. Her work has traveled nationally as part of juried exhibitions. She was a 2024 artist in residence at the Indiana Dunes National Park and is also a conservation volunteer, aspiring naturalist, and art teacher. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha.
Hello.
Aloha. Aloha and welcome, Christine. Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, we'd like to welcome you to the show. And of course, our first question is always to find out your origin story. I always like to tee it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Christine.
Well, I would love to tell you that I am Diana Prince, secretly Wonder Woman. She was always my favorite. That would be the best origin story. But no, I actually came to art mostly as an adult. I loved art as a kid, but really grew up wanting to be a poet. Somewhere I learned that poets lived in garrets. And when I learned what a garret was, and that I could have my own room in an attic somewhere, I decided that was the career for me. And I just grew up mostly writing poetry and ended up becoming a writer initially. It's not easy to do that as a career. But I had a science background in college and found myself in the field of technical writing. So my art really began in community art centers after work, just looking for a more creative outlet. And even in my work, I would often try to finagle the more creative jobs. If there was anything that I could get my hands on that was art related or doing something a little more what I thought of as fun, I would try to move myself in that direction. So in my technical writing career, I made a lot of lateral moves from the documentation department into marketing and then from marketing into other kinds of areas until finally I was working. I got married and moved to Colorado, and I had been working as a technical writer for about 10 years in South Bend, and I met my husband on an airplane in Portugal, and he was from Ohio. And so we were two Midwesterners that met on this airplane overseas, talked all the way back to the United States, ended up dating and getting married, and it was just a really great way to start a relationship. And we ended up moving to Colorado, and my company let me continue to work for them. But then they laid off all the remote employees. So then I had an opportunity to just go do something different. And unfortunately for me, the thing I chose to do different was to dive deeper into technical writing as a career and to start working on a PhD, which in my 40s was just a very difficult thing to do. And I kind of burned.
Because of time or?
Time. And it really was the wrong direction. I mean, I've always tried to get into the things that are more creative. And diving deeper into technical communication and rhetoric just did not feel creative. And it is very stressful to be in graduate school, no matter how old you are. It was a really good program through Texas Tech. It was a distance program. So it involved occasional travel down to Lubbock, staying there on campus, meeting my cohort. All of that was really great, but it just was just absolutely the wrong direction. And I remember standing at the kitchen window one day and thinking, what am I doing? This is just not what I want to be investing
in. So what did you do
in.
Then? Did you decide I'm going to just turn around? And
Yeah. I had some friends in, I had been volunteering as a gardener at a sustainable water-wise community garden. And
those folks were so lovely, and that really got me into conservation, being with that group. We would maintain the garden, but we also talked to anybody who came up about how to plant sustainably, because there's so much drought in Colorado. And these really wonderful people that I gardened with said, hey, you know, there's a program up at the Denver Botanic Gardens. And I drove up from Colorado Springs and I took one class, and I just loved it. I mean, I just absolutely fell in love. My other thought was to go into cooking. I also enjoy cooking, but I'm really glad that I ended up in art. And we just had the most wonderful, generous teachers in that program. They were very talented individual artists themselves. It was a very highly structured, almost academic program. And we just covered everything from botany to the basics of different illustration media. And after a few years, I had a foundational certificate in botanical and scientific illustration, but was not all that thrilled with plants and flowers. As much as I love to garden with them, I just had this kind of passion to explore birds and started working on bird illustrations. And my initial bird illustrations were very rough and very not anatomically correct.
Were they songbirds or larger birds?
I started with songbirds. The first bird I illustrated was a western bluebird. And we used to find them down at the creek near my home. And I had a very grainy reference photo that I had taken. I didn't have a good camera. And I did a colored pencil piece where I tried to do a very large illustration of the entire creek with the bird in the foreground. And it was a beginning piece. I enjoyed it.
We all have them, you know?
Yes. Yes.
In photography, they always say the first 10,000 images you have are your worst. So,
well, yeah. Or it takes 10,000 hours to really learn something. Yeah, I have a lot of those pieces from that time, and just tried a lot of different colored pencil classes. And I really fell in love with that medium of the ones that we were learning in the program. And then I took a class with an artist named Susan Rubin, who works on drafting film. And that drafting film is translucent. And she taught us how to apply the colored pencil to what's essentially Mylar. And then you can layer it over other kinds of images. So I started working on that. And then my process just got increasingly complex and complicated over the years.
So did you go through, so what was the testing of colored pencils? Do you have like a particular favorite colored pencil? Because some of them are so nice and creamy and some are.
Yes. And, you know, I've lost track of all the latest and greatest technology that's been coming out. Now that I'm teaching, my students are bringing in products that I've never seen. So I get to play around with things that I don't normally try. I settled on a Faber-Castell colored pencil. It has an oil binder, and the pencil leads are very hard. And for the detailed, realistic work that I do, that hard lead is really superior. And I do also use the creamier wax-based pencils. But my go-to pencil has always been that Faber-Castell. And hopefully they'll never end that line. I don't know what I would do. I reach for my, I have kind of a palette that I repeat over and over again, right? The way that I mix colors, I use the same, you know, sepia and indigo to make my blacks. And, you know, if that were to go away, I'd have to develop some new color mixing. But when I teach, I just love that the students bring in all of these different products and we test them, and I learn just a ton. But I know there are every year just increasingly different kinds of products that I haven't even gotten a chance to try yet.
You know, I just as a side note, I was listening to your technical report writing, and I took one class of that in college. And the one thing I do remember is the difference between because and since. One, to be precise, one is causal and one is a time thing, because we use, and that was my one little note. I was thinking about that. Oh, yeah, I remember my technical reporter, you know, because he always jump all over you. No, it's not since, it's because.
I taught technical writing as a college instructor in Colorado Springs. And the thing that I always hoped the students would take away is to first and foremost, understand your audience.
Right.
That's like the tenet of technical writing. And a student walked up to me several years after I had taught her, and she thanked me for teaching me and teaching her. And she said, oh, you know, the best thing I learned was how to lay out a page. Okay.
Well,
not exactly.
I guess learning anything's a win, right?
That's right.
I guess for a course, if you take away one big thing, and that was my big thing, because I come across that all the time, and people are like, since because, oh no, I know that's wrong, because I was beating me. It was good class, even though that was not really. I took it. I just think it's a side thing. So. You're teaching, you're doing things like that, and we'll get into talking about your upcoming exhibits, but talk about some of the past things that you've done in terms of exhibiting. I mean, we got you in Colorado. I guess we wanted to see how you got back to Northwest Indiana.
Oh, yes. I used to exhibit at the Denver Botanic Gardens. I loved the themed shows that we did. I found that really perfect for my artwork, and it's kind of funny when I come here, I talk to artists and they don't always like tightly themed shows. They want more flexibility. I love having a kind of a unique theme. And we would do things like wicked plants, where you could illustrate a weed or something that was toxic, or plants that have beneficial pharmacological value. And so you would choose your plant and illustrate it. And we would have these sort of semi-educational exhibits through the Denver Botanic Gardens. And they were a lot of fun. One of my favorites was a show about whimsy. And so people could do really anything and make it whimsical. And I did a basket of fruit. And I had recently taken a class in cartooning. And so the fruits had faces. And each one was laughing in a slightly different way, and that was one of the most fun things that I had an opportunity to do. So I really like those tightly themed shows.
I do too.
Yeah, it can really help guide my creativity just to have some guardrails around it. And I'm a very slow illustrator. I take months sometimes on a single piece. So if there's a show coming up a year in advance and the theme has been set, you know, that's perfect for me. I really like that. We decided to move back to Indiana because my husband and I both had parents who were getting older. We wanted to come back toward family. It was the end of the pandemic. The pandemic was really, I know, traumatic globally. And I think for myself, I remember just sitting in my living room, refreshing that screen where the world map was showing how many people were dying every day. And I would just sit and refresh that. That was a terrible thing to do to myself in hindsight. But there was just a lot of anxiety during those years. And I think we started to focus, like a lot of people, more on family. My husband had the ability, as he was working from home and working remote, so there was no reason why he couldn't move. So we decided to come back to Indiana. And almost immediately on, you know, hitting the ground here, I fell into this just amazing, wonderful art community. I've been thriving here even more than I did in Colorado. I met Christina Kanowski almost right away, who's, of course, fabulous.
Well,
There you go.
And another bird lover and bird artist. And I had never met so many people who were doing wildlife photography, illustration, painting, and who had kind of a conservation message in their work. And it's just been like finding a cohort to come here. So I've been involved in a couple of conservation themed exhibits. There was a couple of them at the Art Barn School, one about pollinators and another about endangered species in Northwest Indiana. And that was a group of four of us, four or five of us. And we did a panel discussion. That was a lot of fun, something I had never done before. So, you know, coming back to Indiana has just been really great for me. I just feel like finding a cohort of other artists, and in the Area Artists Association as well. I've been active in that, in the, it's an organization in Michigan City that's affiliated with Lubeznik Center for the Arts. And that's been wonderful too, to meet working artists who, are in all different media. Things I would never even think about, sculptors, woodworkers, painters, photographers. And we talk to one another about our artwork. And it's just, that's been really great. I feel like that's helped me professionalize a little more. So, yeah, so there's just been a lot of good things going on here in Northwest Indiana. I'm a member also of the Chesterton Arts Center. And I have some work there occasionally. And I think last year they did a beautiful area exhibit involving a lot of different organizations on the Hanels.
Right.
And I was included in there. That was just tremendous show. Yeah.
You know, I'd like you to briefly talk about your experience, you know, as an artist in residence for the Dunes, so that, I mean, we've had several people on, artists, and talk about your experience doing that.
Oftentimes I'll see opportunities and I'll ask around, like, is this a good thing to do? And every time I brought up that program through the Dunes, the artists I spoke to who had done it were just so positive about it. And interestingly, a friend of mine who's an artist in Colorado had family out here, and she came here and did the artist in residence the year before we moved. And she gave me all kinds of information about the program. I was very excited. I was very excited when I was accepted into that. I spent 2 weeks living in the dunes and hiking around, and I would go out and collect reference material and sketch in the morning and then work in the afternoon in the artist residence. And it was just an amazingly positive experience. It was really great. I developed a piece for that, for their collection. And one of the nicest pieces I think I've done since moving back. So that was really fun.
Do you still write poetry?
I do.
Do you include it in your bird pieces?
No, but I have not yet, but I do write poetry for myself, and you'll see a lot of text and words in my artwork. And a lot of what I do is really read the text and search for poetic language that I can incorporate into my pieces. So I use a lot of historical text from land survey notes, which are very dry, but then I'll find the little human voice in there where the surveyor talks about maybe it was raining or, you know, they come across a beautiful spring brook, and I'll make that the focus of the piece.
So we have a few minutes left here, but we have some upcoming things that you're involved with that are going to be on the schedules. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, the first thing is right now I'm in an exhibit in the LaPorte County Convention Center called Anything Goes. That's a group exhibit through Area Artists Association, and that's running through the end of May. And then three artists, myself, Christina Kanowski, and Betsy Fleek, we are doing an exhibit called Feathers, an Experience in Bird Art Education, and that's going to be at the Beverly Shores Museum June 12th. through July with a reception on June 12th. And the exciting thing about that is that on that Sunday morning, each of us is going to do a special program that's free. So I'm going to do nature journaling, and Betsy is going to do a nature walk, and Christina is going to do some birding. So please come out and enjoy that. And then the Migration Marketplace for the Dunes Birding Festival is a public event that you can come to even if you're not at the festival. And it's during the hours of the birding festival. And I'll have a table there, and I'll have some of my artwork as well as some handmade goods that I develop. So come out and see me.
Enticing.
So anything beyond that, like do you have plans for midsummer or into the fall? Any exhibits or things coming up?
I am applying for things that I have not heard back about yet. So last year I did the Lubeznik Art Festival. I've applied for that. I've applied for several other festivals and marketplaces. And I would say follow me on my website and on Instagram. I definitely have plans for midsummer and beyond. It just depends on what I get accepted to and what I decide I can afford to do. So
quickly, why don't you go ahead and tell us your website and Instagram so people can find you?
So I am chubbleart.com. And on Instagram, I am Chubble Art. So C Hubble Art. C-H-U-B-B-E-L-L-A-R-T.
Okay. We have about 1 minute left. Is there something outside of art you like to do?
Oh, my gosh. I love history. I love birding and sewing and cooking. So, yes, many things outside of art that I love to do. Probably at the top of that list is every time I need to calm down or soothe myself, I go see a bird.
Well, and there's a lot of opportunities in this area. So I'm yes. fortunate enough to live in a lake, and that's where I do a lot of my photography for my kayak and everything. So
yeah, wonderful.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. There was you can find our guest at chubbleart.com, and we'll have a link on her picture that will take you to that website. And Christine Trouble, she's going to be available for several exhibits, including the one at the depot. And also, we're in the exhibit together, actually, at the LaPorte County Convention Bureau and everything. Christine, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your art journey and personal journey, getting you from Colorado to here.
Thank you both. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Best of everything.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Art of the Year listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art of the Year anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode.
This is Howard Levy, musician, author, and educator, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Scott Tyring to Art on the Air. Scott was exposed to a variety of music from an early age. In high school, he sang in a band and played school dances and community fundraisers. In college, he learned to play guitar. He was writing songs even before learning guitar. He wrote from personal experience. He found the process both rewarding and healing. Then he paused performing to focus on his family and his engineering career. In 1994, he was ordained and has served in the central and northern Indiana. In February of 2026, he released a new album called Love, War, and Misadventures. The album is Americana, a mix of country, rock, blues, and jazz. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Scott. It's very nice meeting you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to meet you too, Esther.
And Scott, great to get reacquainted with you again and catch up again from the old land in Chesterton. But how we always like to start our show off is finding out about our guests. I call it the origin story, how they got from where they were to where they are. So tell us all about Scott.
Well, I was born in Evansville, Indiana, but lived in Buckskin. You ever heard of Buckskin?
Good name.
So there's tiny little, you know, Indiana's a lot of tiny towns, and I lived in one. In Buckskin was probably is in Gibson County, about 5 miles away from Oakland City. Oakland City's got a college down there, a teacher's college. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. But anyway, it's in the Evansville area, about 30 miles outside of Evansville. And we lived there till I was 4. Didn't have running water in the house we lived in, so we had a, you know, like an outhouse in the back. And then I think when I was 3, my dad actually built on a bathroom with running water and tub and shower and all that.
Did you have an artesian well on the property? Or
yeah, we did. We had a well and like a hand pump, water pump for the kitchen.
I am familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you know, there was a shower in the basement, I think. You know, so there was a pump in the well that could provide pressurized water to the house, but it was only like a shower in the basement. And I think some, I know, I remember we used to take baths in laundry wash tubs with the big ringers, you know, big galvanized tub, and we'd take baths in those. And I was there till I was 4, and then we moved to Central City, Kentucky, which you might know is the home of the Everly Brothers.
Ah.
And my father worked for Peabody Coal Company down there, and we were down there for 7 years. So most of my elementary school career was spent in Central City. And, you know, when the music that I listened to in those days was, you know, whatever my parents were playing. But I had 2 older brothers, and what they were playing was quite different. So my dad was playing like Glenn Campbell and Ann Murray and Jerry Reed and Chet
Atkins.
That's good
for lyrics.
Uh-huh. And then downstairs, it was Steppenwolf and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin and Frank Zappa and, you know, all the great classic rock bands. I was the Who. I was exposed to all of it. The Monkees. So that was my first love, is the Monkees. I remember loving that group. My brothers had the first album. I loved the theme song. I especially loved the song, I'm going to buy me a dog off that album, because it was funny. They do like a vaudeville act with the song, and, you know, I loved it.
Did you watch the show?
Yeah, oh, yeah, we did. And it was in syndication. You know, we watched reruns and stuff on Saturdays. As a matter of fact, I own the series.
Ah. Mm.
I bought it on DVD and WKRP in Cincinnati. We were talking about
right.
earlier. Yeah.
So then from there, we, and no, Esther covered a lot of this in the intro, but let's kind of continue on. And again, focused on some of the things you do, engineering and music, and how we got into the ministry.
Okay. So we moved back to Southern Indiana when I was like in 6th grade and spent the rest of the time in Spurgeon, Indiana, which is Southern Pike County. I went to Pike Central High School. I was involved in choir and band and all that kind of stuff. That's where I was in this rock band. It was a satirical punk rock band. And what I mean by that was we weren't being serious about being punk rockers. But we created a punk rock band for like a pep rally just as a joke. And it took off. And so
did you write your material, or were you using?
Yeah, a lot of it was like song parodies. So we would take like Satisfaction by the Stones and put different words to it. And so that song was called I Hate Disco, which was a big deal in the late 70s. You know, punk was like this breath of fresh air. And so anyway, we were called the Kamodz, K-A-M-O-D-Z. The whole thing was just a big, you know, joke. But we did it for a couple of years, and I was the singer, and I would write music and write songs. We had some originals that I'd written. And then when I went to college at Rose Hulman Institute of Technology in Terre Haute, there was a couple guys on the floor who had their own guitars and knew how to play, and I didn't know how to play. And I always like wanted to know how to play, so they gave me lessons, and I learned how to play guitar my freshman year in college. And I told myself, I said, if I can learn to play Don McLean's American Pie and sing it at the same time, if I can play it and sing it at the same time, then I'll know that I'm good enough to go get my own guitar. And so 3 months of work, I got there, went and bought my own guitar.
So was it did you learn by book or just by, how did you learn?
Well, he showed me chords, and then you can buy music book that has chord finger patterns over the music. And so I had like a Beatles book you know, and I knew all the music by heart because I was a Beatles fan, but they showed the chord patterns where you put your fingers and what fret positions that went right along with the music of the song. So that's how I really learned, was using chord chart books.
That's good motivation. I'm going to try that. Pick a song and instead of it, it just seems to make it more doable, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
of course, I didn't take any lessons other than what my dorm mates taught me. So, you know, I learned all my how not to play guitar. And so when I actually started taking lessons back in the late 90s, I took 3 years of lessons with a Butler School of Music graduate by the name of Jim Bruner. And I had to unlearn a lot of, you know, bad technique. I had a really heavy hand, and I've learned a little bit better way to play. And also, playing with a band is different than playing by yourself.
Right.
And so I had to learn how to do that too. So,
well, I'm curious to kind of jump ahead to your current album, The Love War and Misadventures. And of course, we're going to feature two songs. The first one is Daddy's Brown Bottle. So tell us about the album, how you came to finally do this, and the first song.
Well, this album came about, I wanted to record a love song for my wife, which is the first track on the album. I couldn't have done better. So I went into the studio and I got together with a friend of mine, Andy Simons, who was the tech director at Zionsville United Methodist Church, where I was on staff. And so I knew him from then. And so he used his own personal studio, the sound machine in Carmel, and then he pulled together his contacts in the music industry in the Indianapolis area to help record the album. Some of the people I already knew, but some of the people I hadn't met yet. And Andy has worked in professional music studio recording industry for over 30 years in the Indianapolis area. He actually was a recording engineer for John Mellencamp's Crumbling Down single off the Uh-Huh album back in the early 80s. He's been around, and so he knows a lot of people, and he pulled all those folks together, and we did this one song, and it was such a great experience. I love the way it turned out. I said, let's just keep going. Let's do a whole album. I've got a lot of music. And we started like mining music from back in when I was in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. We're talking like music when I was in my 20s, and so it's like 40 years old.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And what's really interesting about it is that they've kind of taken, some of the songs have taken on a different meaning for me now. You know, here I am in my 60s, and I'm hearing myself in the 20s, and, you know.
Some things need to percolate.
Yeah, they bring a new kind of life to them. And so really thrilled with how the album turned out. We called it Americana because I'm not a country fan and I didn't want to call it country.
Okay.
But there's some songs that it just, they had to be country, just, you know, Daddy's Brown Bottle being one of them. Just, it couldn't be anything else. And so we just leaned into it. And we just, each song, we just kind of said, what's this song want to be? And, you know, so we're going to talk about two today. Daddy's Brown Bottle is a country song. And the other one, Necklace of Clover, is like an arena rock power ballad from the 80s. And so it's a wide variety that you will experience on this album.
Okay, well, let's take a listen. Daddy's Brown Bottle, Scott Tyring, Love, War, and Misadventures.
It's another work day evening. Daddy walks through the door. I rush over to greet him like so many times before. And like so many other nights, he pushes on by. Goes to the fridge, gets him a beer. I go to my room. Daddy's brown bottle gonna help him through the night. Daddy's brown bottle gonna make it all right. Daddy's brown bottle gonna show him the way. Daddy's brown bottle gonna take him away. Sits back in his easy chair and
stares out at the walls. And when he wants another beer, only then my name he calls. I try to find something to do to get him to notice me. But when I do, he yells, "Get out. Just leave me be." Daddy's brown bottle gonna help him through the night. Daddy's brown bottle gonna make it all right. Daddy's brown bottle gonna show him the way. Daddy's brown bottle gonna take him away. Evening, tired of being abused and ignored. Mom and Dad were out for the night, and I was sitting around feeling bored. I went to the fridge, opened the door, brown bottle caught my eye. I cracked it open, slugged it on down. Much to my surprise, Daddy's brown bottle gonna help me through the night. Daddy's brown bottle gonna make it all right. Daddy's brown bottle gonna show me the way. Daddy's brown bottle gonna take me.
Daddy's Brown Bottle with our guest today, Scott Tyring, on Love, War, and Misadventures.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. And after a brief pause, we'll return to our guest today on Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you. And now we return to our guest on Art on the Air.
You know, Scott, I was talking with a friend of mine today, Matt Buchanan, about poetry versus songs and how it could be the same subject matter. But for me personally, I process them in different ways. Like, you're like, if I read those words that you said in Daddy's Brown Bottle as a poem, I would feel one way. But hearing it put to music made me so depressed and sad. Actually,
well, it's supposed to be a sad song. It's supposed to be a warning. And right. I wrote it about 30 days after I admitted to alcoholism. That was back in 1997. I had some little kids at home, and I admitted that I can't drink anymore.
Right.
You know, I'm the kind of person that I can't just have one. So I put it down. By the grace of God, I'm still sober. since then. So that's what, 28 years going on almost.
Wow.
It'll be 29 in August, I think.
Well, congratulations. Let's talk about the next song real quickly, because we're running out of time, actually. Necklace of Clover.
Necklace of Clover is about an experience when I was a little boy. I grew up during the Vietnam era, and my oldest brother, David, 9 years older than me, he was very much involved in the whole hippie scene of the late 60s, and drugs and draft card burning and, you know, that kind of thing. And he ran away from home several times due to the conflict at home between him and my father, mostly. So for me, there's some trauma involved at home, the hitting and screaming and yelling. And so I am a war victim from the standpoint of the war at home. Back in those days, they called it the generation gap.
Right.
So I saw it on the front lines. And he was home from one of the times he had run away, and we were out by the family swing underneath this big tulip tree picking through the clover, and he made me one of those clover blossom necklaces and hung it around my neck and said, "Stay just the way you are. It's the only way to be."
Well, let's take a listen to it. This is Scott Tyring's album Love, War, Misadventures, Necklace of Clover.
I saw my mother crying, my brother's gone away from home, ran off to save the dying, my father said, it's the only way, in the name of God and country. A necklace of clover or a crown of thorns. When will it all be over? Hearts filled with scorn.
A nation
is torn by a war where nothing was won. Father-son reunion with swallowed pride and nothing to hide. They embraced with understanding. Bad feelings fled and nothing was said. Necklace of clover or a crown of thorns. When will it all be over? Hearts filled with scorn. A nation is torn by a war when nothing was won.
And that was Scott Tyring's Love, War, and Misadventures, Necklace of Clover with our guest today.
Boy, I wish we had time to talk about all the songs.
Oh, well, thank you. Maybe there'll be another opportunity down the road.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's give you this last few moments here to tell us how people can find you, like online, where they can get the album, all that information.
Well, the album's available on all the major streaming platforms. So you can listen to it on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Pandora, Deezer. If you'd like a CD, you can send me a message through my Facebook page, just Scott Tyring. I have a Facebook music page, and I'll get a message from you. For $20, I'll send you a CD. I couldn't believe how much it costs to mail those things.
Oh, yeah.
So $20, I'll send you a CD if you'd like. What's nice about the CD is it has three alternate mixes. One of I Couldn't Have Done Better. Basically, we took the electric guitar off of it, so it sounds piano-driven.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show. That's Scott Tyring. His album is Love, War, and Misadventures, and you've heard where you can get it. Thank you so much, Scott, for reconnecting and sharing your album and music with us.
Thank you, Larry. Esther.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Scott.
All right. Take care.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry are on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Are on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.